All right, so today we'll look at diuretics. Diuretics are medication that function basically on our fluid volume in our body. Diuretics is a class of medication that also affects the blood pressure and the fluid volume of the body. Basically, there are four groups, or we say classes of diuretics. The first one is the high ceiling diuretics. Second is the Tazard diuretics. Let's begin with the first one, which is the high ceiling diuretics, the loop diuretics. Now, these loop diuretics, there are specific things about them that they work on the body, how they implement the action or how they carry out the action on the body. Now, among these diuretics, the first one we'll talk about is the loop diuretics. Now, this loop diuretics, it is what we call the high ceiling loop diuretics. They work in the loops of Henle, in the ascending loop of Henle. Now, the kidneys have different parts. Where the loop diuretic work is what we call the loop of Henle. Henle is where they work, and that's why they call them the loop diuretics. Now, it is important, very important, for us to know where these medication work on the body to achieve the therapeutic effect. We have to know that very well. Then we say that these loop diuretics, how do they work? One, they work on the loops of Henle. To be specific, they work in the ascending limb of the loop of Henle. Now, they work, one, they block the reabsorption of sodium and chloride and prevent water reabsorption. Now, they block sodium and chloride reabsorption, and they also block water reabsorption. Meaning, to reabsorb simply means to take away. That means if they reabsorb anything, they are preventing others from taking something. So reabsorbing to take in. Now, if this medication blocks reabsorption, that simply means the body will not reabsorb the fluid and electrolyte that is being prevented by this medication. For short, when you take the loop diuretics, the body let go water, sodium, and chloride. Importantly, water, sodium, and chloride are important electrolytes from the body that when you take diuretics, it causes you to urinate faster, putting out the sodium, the chloride, and the water through urination. So the term diuresis means to urinate faster. So when you take the sodium, when you take these loop diuretics, they put out water, sodium, and chloride in excess amount. That's what's happening with the loop diuretics. Now it is important also for us to understand how this occurs, how it happens. Because without knowing how it occurs, we cannot work with this medication effectively. That's one way. Another thing with this medication, the loop diuretics, they cause extensive diuresis. Even when the patient has severe kidney impairment, that is, it is safe to administer in kidney problem. We can still administer the loop diuretics. So when even patient is having a severe kidney problem, whether it is CKD, chronic kidney deficiency or kidney disease, or they are having AKD, the acute kidney problem or kidney disease, they are still safe to take these diuretics. They're going to still work on their body. They're going to still strain the body to release water and sodium along with chloride from the body. That's how they work. So importantly, we have to remember that these medications, they work on the ascending limb in the loop of Henle. That's one tool. They prevent or they block water, sodium, and chloride reabsorption, meaning they let go of them a lot. The next thing in here is they also cause extensive urination, which we call diuresis, even when a patient is having kidney failure. So in kidney failure, we can still administer this medication, they can still work for the patient. There are several examples for these medications. But most importantly, furosemide or Lasix is the most commonly used or most commonly known or most commonly prescribed loop diuretic. Furosemide. If you're a nurse, you have never heard the name furosemide, meaning you're not a nurse. So everyone in this group has heard the name furosemide or Lasix in school, at their job, or somewhere you read it. You have heard the name furosemide. Another medication is the bumetanide. Bumetanide is also another form of loop diuretics. Another one is the ethacrenic acid. Is another medication that falls under the loop diuretics. These are the most common ones. So it is important that we know much about these most common loop diuretics. They are called the high ceiling because their effect on the kidneys are so hard that they can create so much diuresis. That's why they call them the high ceilings diuretics. Now, they have more effect on the kidneys compared to other diuretics. That's why they call them the high ceilings. Any question on these medications? Now, the loop diuretics, they are used when there is an emergent need for rapid fluid mobilization. In the case of pulmonary edema caused by heart failure, conditions that are not responsive to others diuretic like the osmotic, the TASA, when those other classes of diuretics have failed us, we turn to use the loop diuretic because they are the strongest of the diuretic. They are the highest in terms of ranking. So when others diuretic fail to pull fluid from the body, the loops are the ones we turn to because they are the one we call the high ceilings diuretics. Moreover, these diuretics can also function on other conditions, like when you have a damage caused by the liver, cardia, hypertension, and other kidney disease conditions, we turn to use the loop diuretics. So these things are important for us to know them as we move ahead. Any questions so far?
Madhuka, read that thing you wrote just for us so that we will not make that mistake.
Yeah, that's what Madhuka read.
Such as Adina.
So, any question? Any questions so far?
So far, so good.
Okay. Now, then we look at the complications. There are complications that we want to look at among these medication. These complications include one. When you are on this medication, you're going to have dehydration. That's one. We're going to have dehydration is one. We're going to have hyponatremia, hypochloremia, hypotension, other toxicity. These are all problems we're going to face or we might face when we are on these medications. So it is important for us to know the management for these complications. For dehydration, we have to monitor the symptoms for dehydration, which include dry mouth, thirst, increased thirst, minimal urinary output, weight loss. That's why you got to do the patient weight every day at the same time to make sure to monitor if there's any weight loss occurring. So you want to make sure you look at these things very well. You want to make sure any urinary output less than 30 ml per hour, it is an abnormal urinary output, and that should be addressed with some acuity. For hyponatremia and hypochloremia, you got to monitor patient electrolytes. You monitor for headache or chest pains, calf pains, or pelvic pains. This might indicate thrombosis or embolism. So these are signs of embolism, blood clot formation, when they are on these medications. You want to minimize the risk of dehydration by starting patients on low doses, and then with time we increase the doses. We cannot start patients on the high doses of this medication. They start with low one and we step it up until it reaches the desired level for these diuretics. What's ready for the loose diuretics? Because they are very strong on the kidneys. It can also cause hypotension. The reason is that when you are on these diuretics, it causes us to urinate a lot, which we are losing fluid, and the loss of fluid can lead to hypotension. So we still have the risk of having it as another complication. So when a patient has hypotension, you want to monitor blood pressure and educate about postural hypotension. These are things you want to monitor for. You want to make sure also monitor for other toxicity, which is one of the greatest side effects of the medication. You have bell ringing in the ear, tinnitus, you have that in the ear. Now, this occurs in furosemide and other medication. One of those medications is you have the aminoglycoside. Those aminoglycosides antibiotics can also cause this problem. So we want to make sure we should not administer furosemide along with any other ototoxic medications, such as the anti-malaria quinidine, such as the aminoglycoside antibiotics, gentamicin. All of these can cause ototoxic problem for the patient. So when you combine two ototoxic medications together, it's going to cause serious adverse effect of the same problem. You're going to escape. So you don't want to administer two medications of the same adverse effect together, because it's going to increase the risk of having the adverse effect that you do not want to have. And adverse effects are undesired effect for of medications. Now, we want to also make sure when you are providing this medication, when you are administering them, the body is putting out potassium, it is putting out chloride, it is putting out sodium, it is putting out fluid. Because of the level of depletion to these important electrolytes, the body stands at risk for going into deficit for these electrolytes. That's why we're going to have hypochloremia, because there'll be a decline in the chloride level in the body. We have hyponatremia. There will be a decline in sodium level in the body, or natrium level in the body. There will be a decline in potassium, because there will be a decrease in potassium in the body, which will derive from increased fluid loss. So all of these electrolytes, there will be a decline in the storage for these electrolytes. So the patient stands at risk for having or adverse effect of this medication. So one is hypokalemia. Any electrolyte level of potassium less than 3.5 is considered a low level, which is called hypokalemia, which we want to prevent. For that reason, I said before, potassium is one of those electrolytes that has a direct effect on the heart. When you are having dysrhythmia, cardiac problems, irregular heartbeat of the heart, These things are derived from low level of potassium, hypokalemia. So when you are going to the problem, you're going to monitor the cardiac status and the level of potassium in the body. There will be a decrease in potassium level. You teach the patient to consume high potassium food, such as what? Banana is high in potassium. You have all those foods. You can go ahead and look at these foods and other things that are very high in potassium. The nurse needs to educate the patient on high consumption of potassium supplement that will increase the level of potassium in the body. Now, you want to also make sure you teach the patient about the signs and symptoms of hypokalemia, which include vomiting, nausea, fatigue, leg cramps, and general weakness. These are the most cardinal signs and symptoms for hypokalemia in the body that we need to remember for the NCLEX. Now, when we are on this medication, we also see the chance of having other problems, other adverse effects like hyperglycemia. Because when the body is losing water, electrolytes of sodium and potassium and chloride, the body will go high in sugar because sodium, potassium, water, when they are in the body, they help to dilute the sugar level or the blood sugar level within the body. The absence of those electrolytes will lead to increase in the storages for this blood sugar level. So you have a high blood sugar level because what's supposed to dilute those level of blood sugar and other things in the body will be absent. So you have hyperglycemia. You're going to also have hyperuricemia, uric acid. Uric acid, when it's in the body, the body will need fluid to dilute the system. Now, if you have low fluid in the body due to these diuretics, it leads to increase in the amount of uric acid level in the body, which might cause what we call hyperuricemia. There will be hypocalcemia because when you are letting go fluid, chloride, sodium, there will be a let go of calcium, which will cause hypocalcemia. There will be a decrease in the good cholesterol, which is HDL. There will be a decrease in this good cholesterol, HDL. There will be an increase in the bad cholesterol, LDL. So these are areas you want to focus and make sure you understand, because in the NCLEX, this can come in slower than I apply. You got to remember that for these medications, when you are having hypokalemia, hyponatremia, hypomagnesemia, when you are having all these things, you are having low level of water in the body, there will be increased blood sugar, there will be increased uric acid level, there will be decreased good cholesterol, and there will be increased bad cholesterol, which is LDL. For those reasons, you got to monitor the blood glucose level, monitor the uric acid level, or to monitor magnesium level, monitor lipids, because lipids level give us cholesterol, the high, the HDL, the LDL, the triglyceride, the total cholesterol. The level of lipids give us those findings. So you have to monitor lipids level in the body. When there is any suspected changes, decrease the normal or increase the normal in all these body serum level, The provider needs to know about that or those increment or decrease in the body for those electrolytes. It's important to let the doctor know about it, and they can start to prevent or provide something that will build it up. For magnesium, they're going to have hypomagnesemia. When you have low level of magnesium in the body, you have muscle weakness, you have muscle twitching, and you have tremors occurring with these medications. You want to avoid using these medications during pregnancy unless it is required. Yes, you want to avoid them. You want to really, really avoid them, because if you don't avoid them, it causes serious problems with pregnant women or breastfeeding women. It is also, if a patient does not have a good urine output, if they are not having urine output, you want to make sure you want to avoid them. Avoid this medication during pregnancy unless it's absolutely required. If there is no urine output in urea patient, you want to make sure you do not want to administer it because it might cause a problem unless that doctor orders it. But it is not okay to administer it in this situation when there is no urine output. Any question on this medication?
Yes. Amadu?
Yeah.
In case of this ochotoxicity, you said it can be reversed with ethylenic acid. Ethylenic acid. So how is it administered? I don't really know about it. Ethylenic acid.
You said the ethylenic acid? Now, also, want to make sure for this medication, they should be used cautiously in patients who have cardiovascular disease, diabetes mellitus, dehydration, electrolyte depletion, and gout. For gout, the reason is simple because gout can derive from increased uric acid, or is gout complication is increased uric acid. So you're going to have that. So you cannot administer a patient who having gout already. Electrolyte depletion, there will be low level of potassium, low level of sodium, low level of magnesium, low level of chloride. For that reason, you cannot administer a patient is already having electrolyte depletion or in the case of low fluid volume. You don't want to administer them because they're going to urinate more, which will cause more harm. When they are already dehydrated, the same thing, you cannot administer. When they're having cardiovascular problem, because the potassium can cause a serious heart shivering or dysrhythmia. So we cannot be having dysrhythmia already or low level potassium and we stay, the patient cannot have heart problem, we stay administer this medication. It's going to cause us more heart problem. Diabetes mellitus also. In diabetes mellitus, like I talk about, there will be increased level of blood sugar due to fluid loss. So when we administer any patient with diabetes and take this medication, it will increase blood sugar level. Want to use it cautiously in patients taking digoxin because digoxin works on the heart directly. If the heart rate is below 60 for adult, you don't administer digoxin. But when you are on this medication, the heart rate will drop because these meds lower the body potassium level, which can also lower the heart rate, and the digoxin lowers the heart rate. So if you serve all two concomitantly or concurrently, it's going to cause decreased heart rate more. So you want to make sure you monitor the cardiac status and potassium and the digoxin level before you can administer it. Concurrently, meaning using it together with antihypertensive medication can have an additive effect. Monitor the blood pressure before you can do that. If we administer these other medications, we have to make sure we understand why are we administered together and that the reason it is being administered together. We have to make sure you look at those reasons because you don't want to make someone to be dependent on the medication for their heart to for their BP to drop. It's not okay for the patient. Lithium carbonate, a mood stabilizer we talked about a couple of days ago. Lithium carbonate levels can increase, which can lead to toxic effect. Now, meaning if they are on lithium and you give them this medication, it will increase the level of the lithium in the body, which can cause lithium toxicity for the patient. So you want to make sure never to administer this medication along with lithium because you're going to increase lithium level, which is called lithium toxicity. You want to make sure you monitor the lithium level for the patient and also adjust the dose or the dosage if it is needed. If there is a drop in potassium lower than 3.5 milliequivalent per liter, there will be changes in the EKG pattern, which you need to notify the doctor or the provider for these changes. Any question? Now, any question? So that was the loop diuretics.
Okay.
minute, please. Did you say we cannot give lithium with the diuretics?
I did not say you cannot. I said,
okay,
when it is given concomitantly or concurrently, you got to monitor lithium level because it's going to dehydrate the patient. When it does, it will increase the level of lithium toxicity effect to be occurring. It will increase the risk of lithium toxicity. So for that reason, if it's administered together, you got to always monitor the lithium toxicity effect and the level of lithium regularly to prevent lithium toxicity.
Okay.
Then look at Taza diuretics. Now, Taza diuretics and furosemide or in the loop diuretic, they work almost the same. There are few differences between the two group of medication. Taza diuretic work on the early distal convoluted tubers. So Taza work on the distal convoluted tubules of the kidneys, while loops work directly on the ascending colon of the lynx, the loops of Henle. So the furosemide or the loops directly work on the ascending limb of the kidney in the loops of Henle, while the Taza work directly on the distal convoluted tubules in the kidneys. That's one of the differences between the two medication groups. Another difference is these two medications, one can be administered in kidney impairment, which is the loop diuretics. One should not be administered when there's a kidney problem, which is the Taza diuretics. Those are the two differences that you talk about. We'll look at all the differences as we go along. Now, for these Taza diuretics, how do they work? They work, one, just like the loops. They work by blocking the reabsorption of sodium and chloride and water also. So they prevent water, sodium, and chloride reabsorption, just like the loops diuretics. They promote diuresis in kidney function, just like the loops diuretics. But they are not to be given when there is a kidney impairment. When the kidney is impaired, when there's an impaired kidney functions, we cannot administer Taza, but we can administer the loops diuretics. That's how we differentiate loops in the Taza. Matter of fact, when there is a hypertension, we want to begin with the Taza diuretic, like the HCTZ, the hydrochlorothiazide. We'll begin with that before looking at the furosemide, because these Taza are lower diuretics compared to the loops. So we start with this one before going to the loops diuretics. We also want to make sure that these Taza diuretics, they work at a different level compared to the loops. Example of these loops include, of the Taza diuretic include hydrochlorothiazide, chlorothiazide, metolazone. Metolazones are all examples of the Taza diuretics. They can cause diuresis when there is no kidney problem. They are the choice of choice for hypertension, when you want to reduce fluid volume to reduce the blood pressure. It is HCTZ we run to. Any question so far? Any question? These Taza diuretics, they are the first line of choice for the treatment of essential hypertension. This medication, they can be used to treat mild to moderate edema that is deriving from heart failure. There's someone said at the beginning of the class, they said that we can use these medications when there's heart failure, when there's edema, there is swelling. Yes, we can administer them in those conditions. We can also administer when there is reduced urine production. They can be used to reduce urine production in in patients who have diabetes insipidus, DR, because in DR there is increased urine production, there is increased urination, which is a condition occurs in diabetes insipidus. So we can also administer this medication in this condition, so they can be used to reduce urine production in people who have diabetes insipidus. This medication will also promote calcium reabsorption and can also reduce the risk of postmenopausal osteoporosis. That's one of the functions. They can be from one class, but they have different uses. Now, another thing is these medications also have complications.
What is this? I don't understand the pathophysiology of reduction of urine in a patient with diabetes insipidus when you give this hydrocortisone.
In the case of diabetes insipidus, these medications, like we talked about, we said they can cause, they are used to reduce urine production in the clients who have diabetes insipidus. So, where urine is produced, now let's also the term red urine. Production where urine is produced. These Tazard diuretics, they work in that portion of the kidneys where urine is produced. Despite they can also cause diuresis, but they have another mode of action. They have another use that can reduce urine production when a patient is having diabetes insipidus, because in diabetes insipidus there is increased urination deriving from increased urine production. Now, so in this situation, it is a negative feedback mechanism which is being used to reduce urine production in this situation. That's what happened in here. So they work on where urine is produced in the kidneys to reduce urine production, because they work in the distal convoluted tubules. So in those area, urine is produced. So when they are given, they work directly on those area of the kidney to reduce urine production. That's how they work. Despite it can also cause diuresis on the bladder or on upper part of the kidney to let go urine. But that's one of the work they can do for the body. So these medications are used to reduce urine production in patients who have diabetes insipidus. Now, then we also have other complications that occur with this medication. Like I said, they have almost the same complications that occur with the loops diuretics, which include hypokalemia, hyponatremia, dehydration, hypochloremia, hyperglycemia, hypomagnesemia, increased LDL, and decreased HDL. They are all the same problems. And the same management is applied to these same problems, these complications. We use the same management to work on these same complications. You want to make sure you avoid this medication during pregnancy because it will decrease maternal blood volume and decrease maternal placenta perfusion, which will cause a compromise in the nutrient supply to the fetus, or nutrient supply to the fetus. So when you take a lot of time in pregnancy, it reduces that placenta flow through which the baby is nourished. So it reduces that placenta flow of nutrients, which will cause the baby deprived of food or nutrients in utero. So we don't use it in utero. If we use it in utero, we want to starve the baby or the fetus. This can also not be used in lactation, because if you do lactation, evaporation, not a breastfeed, because these medications enter the milk and is harmful to the fetus. So let me see something here. There's a word I'm missing there.
Diabetic.
Yes, I want to see something. Where is the word in there? In lactation. It should not be given in lactation because it's going to enter the blood, the breast milk, which is not good for the fetus, for the baby. It's going to become dehydrated. And you have all those things for the baby, which is not good for a baby to be dehydrated. It is also cannot be served, cannot be administered in anyone who have kidney problems, kidney impairment.
Serve
in. It should be administered with caution in patients who have heart disease and also they have diabetes. Patients who have diabetes mellitus, hyperkalemia, hyperlipidemia. So if one has gout, hyperkalemia, hyperlipidemia, hypomagnesemia, and gout, it cannot be administered in this situation. So we got to make sure we prevent its administration. It should be administered orally or IV. If there's GI upset, patients should take the medication with food or after meal. Any question?
Yes, the question I have, I'm asking for the difference between the diabetes incubators wherein you lower the production and then with the diabetes mellitus.
What's the question?
In applying the medication, the diuretics, which is the anesthetizer.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the advice if someone comes in with someone who has diabetes mellitus? They both for the diabetes mellitus and mellitus. So how do you turn to give them care with diabetes?
One is sugar problem and one is water problem. In diabetes mellitus is sugar, the sugar is high. In diabetes insipidus, the water is letting out too often there, which will cause dehydration. So when we work with a patient who has diabetes insipidus, the urine, everything that they drink, every fluid in the body, they keep urinating them. So that's why you give them a Demopressin. It's a drug of choice for diabetes insipidus. Demopressin can help to reduce urine output. And we can also give tensile diuretics. It can also help to work on the kidney to decrease urinary production.
That is for the mellitus?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, any question on diabetes? Any question on the tensile diuretics? So the third group becomes the potassium sparing diuretics. Now, this medication were formed because when you give the loop and the tensile diuretics, guess what happened to the patient? They are losing potassium a lot. And potassium is very important for the heart survival. So that's how they came up to develop the potassium sparing medication to live. The heart needs potassium to survive. So with just the loops and the tensile diuretics, the patient will be losing potassium in high amount, which can cause heart condition. So in potassium sparing diuretics, this block the action of aldosterone. It blocks the action of aldosterone for these medications. And aldosterone function is it let go water and it holds water and sodium, meaning it causes sodium and water retention. That's how aldosterone works on the body. So this medication blocks the function of aldosterone. So it let go only sodium and water, thus by holding potassium in the body to prevent potassium depletion. So when you look at the tensile diuretics, the loop diuretics, these two medications, they can let go potassium a lot, along with sodium, chloride, magnesium, and other electrolytes. Because potassium is the most important among them, so there's a need to have a medication that can hold potassium back to be used by the body or by the heart. So that's why they develop potassium-sparing diuretics. So it comes in, it blocks the action of aldosterone. And when you hear the word aldosterone, it means withholding or holding water and sodium in the body. So when you take aldosterone medication, you'll be having increased sodium and increased aldosterone, increased water in the body. When you stop taking aldosterone, you'll begin to urinate with water and sodium. So potassium blocks the effect of aldosterone. So these are things that are very easy to understand. If you don't understand them, it becomes difficult to work with them and produce good test results in any test that you want to do for with this medication. Now, these medications are combined with other diuretics. For these, now, so we can combine with like mannitol or like Tazad diuretics or the Loops diuretics to administer it. So when we're getting the Loops diuretics, we can give potassium sparing diuretics. Now, these potassium sparing diuretics, they will block the action of depleting potassium by those other diuretics. That's how we combine them to administer the patient to save our storages of potassium in the body. Now, they can be administered for heart failure, and the therapeutic effect can take up to 12 to 48 hours. So it takes at least 12 hours. It's not as fast like the Loops or Tazad. When you take Tazad diuretic in less than 1 hour, you start to urinate faster. And these diuretics, you never give them at night. Why? That's the reason. It's not because they're not sleep. They will sleep. It's not medication that causes insomnia. They will sleep. But they will urinate for nocturia. They will have too much urination in the night. So that's not going to happen to the patient. So,
that too can cause fall, because if the patient getting out every 5 minutes, it's going to fall.
Yeah, it depends. It depends if the patient is a fall risk patient.
Yeah.
But the main problem is that you can't give it because it's going to urinate faster. Now, if it's given BID, you make sure the second dose or the last dose should be given before 2 p.m., before 1400 GMT or before 2 p.m. So the patient can have ample time to urinate faster before the bedtime. So if they give them BID, the second dose must be given on or before 2 p.m. Then it has other complications such as hyperkalemia. You monitor potassium level and initiate cardiac monitoring for serum. Any serum level of potassium above 5 milligrams per liter, you need to put in monitoring for potassium level. Do not administer potassium supplement or other potassium-sparing diuretics in conjunction with spironolactone. So any food that is high in potassium, you cannot administer those food along with these potassium-sparing diuretics. It's going to increase the level of potassium, which can also cause a problem. So potassium must not be above 5.0, and it must not be below 3.5. It should be within the normal range to be effective for the patient. Do not administer this medication or any potassium supplement in conjunction with spironolactone, because spironolactone is the drug of choice. It's the most well-known medication that falls under the potassium-sparing diuretics. Spironolactone or aldactone is the other name for it. Caution should be used if you are to administer this medication with AC inhibitors. AC inhibitors are called the angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. If you are to administer the other medication along with this medication, you got to do it with caution. We should exhibit caution in administering this medication with the AC inhibitors. That's one. The ARB medication, we got to make sure also we administer with cautions, and also the direct renin inhibitors, because these can cause elevated potassium level. All of these can cause high levels of potassium. So for that reason, we should administer with caution when we are to administer with this all medication. Any question? It also has endocrine effects. The endocrine effects have both sexes. You have for male, it deepens the voice and causes impotence in male. For females, there will be menstrual cycle irregularities. The menses will not come on time. It will come different time of the month. In each month, there will be new period coming in. There will be different time coming. For the nursing management, you want to make sure for the patient who is on this medication, you want to advise the patient to observe for the effect. For the effect, advise the patient to observe for adverse effect, and patients should notify the doctor if any of these adverse effect occurs. These are things you want to make sure you understand with these medications. It can cause drowsiness and metabolic acidosis. For that reason, now let's understand these things. In high level of potassium, high level of sodium, high level of blood sugar, the body runs into metabolic acidosis. So this could be another question we can answer in different form. When you have this high level of nutrients in the body, it cannot be dissolved by the body. The body runs into acid level, which become metabolic acidosis, because the body is not breaking down this nutrient or this electrolyte. So they become excess in the body. So which can cause any of these things become excess in the body, it leads to metabolic acidosis, just so you know that. So it will require alertness and effects of medication are known. Monitor for metabolic acidosis, such as drowsiness and restlessness. These are the two signs and symptoms for metabolic acidosis. You have restlessness and you have drowsiness. You're going to have this occurring with the patient. These are contraindicated in patients with hyperkalemia, patients who are taking potassium supplements, or anyone who is on another potassium sparing diuretic cannot take these medications. It is contraindicated in them. It is also the concurrent use with salt substitute medication, potassium supplement, will increase the risk of hyperkalemia. Patient must be advised to report cramps, diarrhea, thirst, altered menstruation, and deepened voice. These are all certain symptoms of hyperkalemia. Any question? Any question? Any question? Then we move to the last group, which is the osmotic diuretics. These ones are very delicate. They work directly on the brain. They reduce the intracranial pressure of the brain and also reduce the intraocular pressure of the eyes by raising the serum osmolarity level, that is the serum osmolarity level, and drawing fluid back into the vascular and the extravascular space. If you have fluid overload in the brain tumor, that will increase the brain pressure or the eye pressure, the intraocular pressure. Mannitol, which is the drug of choice for the osmotic diuretics, can reduce that pressure by returning fluid into the vascular and extravascular space within the brain. That's how they work. These prevent kidney failure in specific situations, such as someone is having hypovolemic shock and they are having kidney failure, or they are having kidney failure and they are having severe hypertension, and we cannot give them the other diuretics. So we give them mannitol. So mannitol specifically is to handle kidney problem with patients having hypovolemia, low level of fluid. We don't want to give other diuretics that will reduce fluid from the body through urination a lot. So we give them mannitol. So in the end, they will ask, we'll give you the case scenario when the patient is having a kidney problem. They need to have diuresis. And then they also want to preserve the fluid in their body because they are having hypotension or hypovolemia. So we give them mannitol. So they work by drawing off water while preserving urine flow and preventing kidney failure. That's how they work. So the omega diuretic prevents kidney failure in specific situations such as hypovolemic shock and severe hypotension because mannitol is not reabsorbed and it remains in the nephrons, drawing off water, thus preserving urine flow and preventing kidney failure. That's how mannitol works for the body. It decreases intracranial pressure and that is caused by cerebral edema by drawing off fluid from the brain into the bloodstream. That's how they work. Now, it also works by promoting sodium retention in water and water in patients who have hyponatremia and fluid volume excess. They also work in that area. They promote sodium retention and water and in patients who having hyponatremia. Any question? And lastly, it is administered for oliguria phase of acute kidney injury. They can be administered in that phase. It has few complications, which include heart failure and pulmonary edema. So when there's a heart failure and pulmonary edema, you hear crackles. For pulmonary edema, you hear crackles on the lungs. On auscultation, you hear crackles. If these symptoms occur with heart failure, you need to stop the medication right away, and then you need to make sure you notify the HCP and notify the HCP. So the symptoms include for heart failure, you see dyspnea, weakness, fatigue, distended neck veins, and weight gain. Those are the common symptoms for heart failure. Distended neck vein. You see this thing in heart failure. So these are things you want to make sure they are at work when you are having problem with the with these symptoms or you're having heart failure. Patient can also have rebound increased intracranial pressure. Despite it is being administered to reduce intracranial pressure, they can also have increased intracranial pressure when they're on this medication, which is called rebound increased intracranial pressure. It is like you are getting medication to prevent infection or to treat infection. Then you are having infection. For antibiotics, you're going to call it super infection. We are providing ciprofloxacin for ear infection, or we are administering amoxicillin or ampicillin for urinary tract infection. But yes, still the patient is having another infection due to the antibiotic, which is called super infection. Now, for these other conditions, when we are administering these meds for increased intracranial pressure reduction, and when the patient develops increased intracranial pressure, that becomes what we call the rebound increased intracranial pressure. Okay, so you know that. So there will be changes in the level of consciousness. There will be change in the pupils sizes. There will be headache. There will be nausea. There will be vomiting. These are cardinal symptoms for rebound increased intracranial pressure. Fluid in electrolytes imbalances in metabolic acid will occur. So when on this medication, they also have fluid electrolyte imbalances when they are having metabolic acidosis. Monitor laboratory values. Monitor the signs and symptoms of metabolic acidosis, such as drowsiness and restlessness. You monitor them. It is contraindicated in patients with active increased intracranial pressure or increased intracranial bleeding. If anyone has active brain bleeding, active cerebral bleeding, they cannot take mannitol. When they're having anuria, there is no kidney urination. There's no urine up from the kidneys. They cannot take this medication. When there's a severe pulmonary edema, they can't take this medication. When they're having severe dehydration, they cannot take this medication. When they're having renal failure, they cannot take this medication. It should be used cautiously in breastfeeding mothers and in pregnant women. They should be used call children in these two conditions, in these two individuals, breastfeeding mothers and also mothers who are pregnant. They cannot use this medication. They should be used of caution. They cannot. It should be used of caution. Any question on this medication?
Yes.